The clock keeps ticking on debt talks.
Meanwhile, the latest jobs report keeps ticking up, too.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It is the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, July 7th. Coming up on the show, signs of compromise as Washington works for a deal to raise the debt ceiling.
Comparing apples to apples when it comes to state Medicaid spending.
And could it be the royal treatment in California means never having to be away from emergency Botox?
All that ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
A couple of jobs reports are out this morning, and they show an improving employment picture for the country. Payroll firm ADP said private employers added 157,000 workers in June. That was about double what economists were expecting. And the Labor Department said fewer people filed for first-time jobless claims last week.
Meanwhile, jobs, of course, are likely to come up as the White House and Republicans try to find common ground on raising the federal debt limit. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us with more on that. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Steve.
Anything new in those talks?
Well, last month when Republicans left the talks, it seemed any increase in tax revenue was totally off the table for them. Serious restructuring of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security seemed to be a no-go for most Democrats. Now, Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor is saying cutting corporate tax breaks and loopholes, which is something the president's been railing about, could be back on the table as long as there are other tax cuts. The White House, meanwhile, is opening the door to changes to Medicare and even Social Security to slow down their cost rise over time. All told, it could amount to a grand tax-raising and deficit-cutting deal.
How are these talks playing overseas, Mitchell?
Well, investors are starting to pay attention, especially with the debt ceiling of August 2nd deadline looming. Jan Randolph follows sovereign risk, that's basically government debt, at IHS Global Insight in London. I asked him how all the politicking here in the U.S. over raising the debt ceiling looks in Europe, given all the recent turmoil they've had over Greek debt.
One could expect debate and disagreement from 27 governments in the European Union. But we don't really expect it from one government in the U.S.
And Randolph says investors will probably get more jittery if this goes down to the wire and there's still no deal to raise the debt ceiling by later this month.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reporting. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's get some analysis now on the debate over the debt ceiling that's going on in Washington from Diane Swonk. She is chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she joins us from Chicago, as she does every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, what's the latest that you're hearing on these debt talks?
Well, we're finally starting to see both sides edge or inch closer together instead of running the other way from each other, which is a major step forward. I know it doesn't sound like much, but having Democrats willing to do much larger cuts, take away some of the ties to inflation on many of the entitlement programs, and on the other side of it, Republicans talking about tax reform, maybe not tax cuts, but some form of tax reform, those are both major steps toward each other after running away from each other for much of the year.
Well, Diane, let's listen to some of the latest here from one of the top Republicans, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor.
Why would you want to raise taxes in a sputtering economy? And that's the position that we've held all along. So any discussion about loopholes must be accompanied by offsetting tax cuts.
Now, Diane, that sounds like a guy who's sticking to his position. Do you think we're going to see a deal by the August 2nd deadline the Treasury Department has put out there in order to avoid a national default?
Actually, you know, that is a movement forward, believe it or not. To talk about eliminating loopholes and reforming taxes is a movement forward on the Republican part. And I think we are going to see a deal done now because public opinion has shifted. More than 40% of Americans now that Moody's and S&P and all the rating agencies are threatening to downgrade our debt, even if we were to make debt service payments, has now shifted. And no one wants to go on their vacations after that August vote with blood of the debt ceiling not being voted increased on their hands.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a new plan on the table today to deal with the mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That plan comes from California Republican Congressman Gary Miller, and it would merge the two government-backed companies into one. So why in the world would you want to make those behemoths even bigger? Well, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports, the new bill is actually aimed at making them smaller.
The housing market depends on Fannie and Freddie because they buy about half of all the home loans that are made. This new bill would create a corporation like a public utility held by the government and would prevent its share of the market from going any higher than 50%. Jamie Gregory is a lobbyist for the National Association of Realtors. He supports the bill, but he says half is still too much.
Ideally, Fannie and Freddie should get back to their historic level of, 22-23% of the marketplace.
Arnold Kling is a former Freddie Mac economist. He says the bill is written to benefit special interests, that the new Fannie Freddie creation would be too lightly regulated, and that Wall Street would find it too easy to saddle the government with the riskiest loans.
That would be the most profitable strategy. They would rather have the government take that risk.
Kling says we'd be better off keeping Fannie and Freddie as they are and regulating them properly or disbanding them altogether. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A United Nations food report shows a rise in its global food price index blamed on higher sugar prices.
Rupert Murdoch's News Corp stock is down another 3% after more companies are pulling ads from his British newspaper. That's after a big phone hacking scandal keeps getting bigger.
We've got more numbers, stocks, and others at our website, marketplace.org. We're also on Twitter. The program is at Marketplace Radio. I am at Jeremy Hobson.
And I am at Radio Chio.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
And now to the Marketplace Global Perspective, the European Central Bank raised its key interest rate today by 0.25%. That follows China's interest rate hike yesterday. And here in the U.S., meanwhile, the Fed is keeping interest rates right about where they've been since late 2008, just above zero. Marketplace's Stephen Beard explains.
Central banks are the original party poopers, as one Fed chairman once famously observed. His job was to take away the punch bowl before the party gets out of hand. Or in other words, push up the cost of borrowing before inflation takes off. But here's the thing, inflation in the Eurozone is almost 1% lower than in the US, and yet it's the European Central Bank, not the Fed, pushing up rates today. That, says Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank, is because the two banks dance to a slightly different tune. The ECB is obliged only to curb inflation, while the Fed must also promote growth and jobs.
It does give the Fed an excuse. It doesn't have to raise interest rates as quickly or as high as the ECB, which has a very clear single mandate, keep inflation down below 2%.
Mind you, he says, today's rate hike underlines a fundamental problem with the euro. The hike is aimed at curbing inflation, which is a problem in Germany, but won't promote growth, which is urgently needed in Greece, Portugal and Spain. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Reports today say low-cost air carrier AirAsia could soon buy 300 commercial planes from Airbus. It would be the biggest airline order ever, and yet another sign the aviation industry is focusing on the growth in Asia. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
Ordering 300 planes, each seating 150 passengers, at a time of high oil prices and an uncertain global economy might seem a little crazy. Not if you look at what's happening in Asia, says analyst Kunal Sinha.
It has become the biggest market. Everybody's betting on this market. So you need to have that fleet to really capitalize on that growth, which is going to happen.
Asia's sudden boom of discount airlines reminds Sinha of the rise of Southwest, JetBlue, and the European low-cost carrier Ryanair more than a decade ago. Except what's happening in Asia, Sinha says, is going to be bigger. One reason, as it stands now, Southeast Asian carriers need to ask for approval to start a new route. That policy is coming to an end in 2015. The other reason? Oh, just the 214 million new air passengers expected from China's growing middle class over the next 3 years. People who, up to now, weren't able to afford a plane ticket. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Back here in this country, a study out today in the journal Health Affairs gives a side-by-side comparison of how states spend money on Medicaid, the government health insurance program for the poor. From the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Gregory Warner tells the tale of two populous states.
So, which state do you think spends more per Medicaid patient, New York or California? Okay, time's up.
New York.
Todd Gilmer is a health economist at UC San Diego and author of today's study in health affairs. He says New York State spends 2.5 times as much, and one reason is price. The average cost of one night in a New York hospital for an adult on Medicaid is $2,100. In California, it's $1,320.
One of the reasons California spends less is they negotiate more actively with hospitals that have lower payment rates than New York.
And Gilmer says that when hospitals are paid more, they admit more patients and keep them there longer.
And that seems to be what's happening in New York. I would question whether or not New Yorkers are better off being hospitalized at a greater rate than Californians.
Hospitalization is the biggest single chunk of Medicaid spending, which makes Gilmer's next finding especially interesting. States with more primary care physicians sent fewer people to the hospital. Again, New York, not so good in this department.
New York has fewer independent primary care physicians participating in the Medicaid program.
Because as generous as New York is in paying hospitals, its compensation rates for primary care physicians are near the lowest in the country. That means more New Yorkers head for a hospital instead of a doctor's office. Of course, Gilmer's study finds that there are lots of factors that influence how Medicaid is spent from state to state. He argues, though, that most states could make a dent in hospital costs by paying primary care physicians more.
That's a really encouraging finding.
Marcia Gold is a senior fellow at the healthcare research group Mathematica. She says the healthcare reform law will raise primary care payments in 2014.
That's the hope, that if you can encourage more primary care, there might be long-term savings.
And that'll be particularly important in 2014 when Medicaid expands its eligibility requirements to allow another 17 million Americans to enroll. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, as you know, this is the beginning of the fiscal year for many states. A lot of states are sort of working out their budgets. And the state of California, lawmakers recently passed their first on-time budget in 5 years, which leaves lawmakers wondering what to do next. And we now have the answer. They have passed SB 946, which is a bill that, among other things, defines a hot dog. Yes,
nice.
It tells you exactly what a hot dog is.
I was wondering what
be.
That was. Yeah, just yesterday I was thinking to myself, what constitutes a hot dog?
Well, here's your answer. A hot dog is a, this is according to the bill, this is word for word, a whole cured cooked sausage that is skinless or stuffed in a casing and may be served on a bun or roll. Now, this is not the first time the state of California has given a definition like this. And in fairness to them, by the way, they say this is for safety reasons, to make sure that, I guess, the proper meats are used or whatever. California also has on the law books the definition of a beverage, which is a liquid for drinking, including water, in case you were wondering.
I was wondering. It's good.
Well, the state of Illinois is in the first full week of its new fiscal year, and it's reportedly already in a battle with Michigan. That state is said to be offering Sears a $50 million package to move its headquarters from suburban Chicago to more urban digs near Detroit. From WBEZ in Chicago, Tony Arnold reports suburban corporate campuses are losing some of their appeal.
Relocating whole companies from the city to the suburbs caught fire in the 80s and early 90s as corporations looked to cut overhead costs. Looking around Chicago's suburbs, you can find the corporate campuses of Kraft, Sara Lee, Motorola Solutions, and Sears Holdings, among others. They're hawking presences in their respective suburbs, drawing thousands of employees every weekday. But now the trend could be reversing itself. United Airlines is in the process of leaving its suburban location and shifting 4,000 people to offices in downtown Chicago. Out east, Swiss bank UBS is considering leaving behind its corporate campus in Stamford, Connecticut, reportedly for New York City.
I do think it's outdated.
Paul Swinand is an analyst with Morningstar. In Sears' case, he says the company's long overdue for a shakeup, and the best way to do that is recruit younger people. Ditching its current facility in Hoffman Estates could help attract 20-somethings who crave the excitement of a bustling city.
Why wouldn't you want your staff, even if they be in the finance division, to actually be seeing what people are wearing, seeing what people are buying, feeling the vibe of a downtown city?
Officially, a Sears spokesman says the company is considering all its options. The state of Illinois is working on an incentive package of its own to keep the retailer. Last year, United Airlines decided to move most of its employees from its headquarters near O'Hare Airport. Jeff Smysek is United CEO.
Many of these jobs, certainly, for example, the technology jobs, could be located anywhere, and we chose Chicago.
But while United looks for some urban cachet, businesses around the old headquarters have a case of the suburban blues. Tony Lebowsko manages D'Agostino's auto repair service.
I got people that come here for 28 years since I've been here. They work for United Airlines. You know, they've been coming around, and now they're going to go downtown. They're not going to come to me anymore.
Lebowsko says United may be moving downtown to grow, but without that traffic from its employees in Elk Grove Village, he may be facing layoffs. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
The cable news network HLN got a big bump in their ratings because of this.
The Casey Anthony trial. Get full coverage every day on HLN.
That's right, Steve. The Casey Anthony trial. I don't know if you've been watching it.
I've been riveted by this whole thing, Jeremy.
I don't even know what it's about, but the HLN has really been all over it. And now the question is, what are they going to do now that the case is wrapping up? And Sally Herships has that story.
If it bleeds, it leads is cliche, but it's working for HLN. When the network broadcast the verdict, it drew 2.5 million viewers.
The question now will be, how do you keep those viewers there?
Tom Umstead is programming editor at Multichannel News.
With the ebb and flow of the news comes the ebb and flow, unfortunately, of the viewers.
Umstead says HLN used the murder case to show viewers it can cover trials much more thoroughly than other networks. But now there's not much more to cover.
I really don't see how they're going to be able to hold on to this.
Syracuse professor Roy Gutterman has been following the Anthony case. He says networks that devote gavel-to-gavel coverage of criminal trials are at the whim of the news cycle. HLN will no doubt now lose viewers, and maybe advertisers too.
I think that's the risk of advertising on a news network. You can't always have news happen.
So, Gutterman says, HLN should scour court dockets for the next big case. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, Prince William, Jeremy, and his new bride, Kate,
yep,
will be in Southern California this weekend. Did you know this? They were Canada
last week. I've been following it very almost as closely as the Casey Anthony
trial. I'm sure you have been. And you know, Prince William is going to be playing some polo. Will you be playing polo with Prince William on Saturday?
I always do when he comes to visit the country. I'm the first person on the list.
you're on the speed dial, right, on
exactly,
his cell phone.
Yes,
that's good.
Course, right.
So the L.A. Times, Jeremy, reported that William had this high-profile Beverly Hills plastic surgeon on retainer in case of an accident.
Just in case he needs an emergency nose job.
Or maybe a Botox shot here or there. Right. You never know when you're going to need something like that. But it turns out this report was false. The Times updated their story. And they said, you know, the Polo Club is the one that's in charge of securing medical help.
Uh-huh.
So they're the ones. They're on top of it. They're going to make sure the doctor is on standby in case William, you know, needs, I don't know, a gauze
whatever
pad or something.
Yeah.
So it turns out that the doctor, the Beverly Hills doctor, said he didn't expect any broken bones anyway at this charity event because royalty will be present. So that's good news.
But you never know what they might put up for auction that could cause a fight, Steve.
You never know. Absolutely. With royalty, I mean, it's up for grabs.
Lunch with the Queen.
Yes.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Enjoy your Thursday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.